Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Every once in a while, we ask Katie Belfast to come by. She's the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, because I'm interested in wetlands. I know you, as you listen, are as well. And sometimes people know a lot about wetlands. Sometimes they think they know a lot, and maybe they don't. So she can always help clear up information and provide some more. And she's joined today by Dan Collins, who works in ecological restoration design. He is planning, implements, manages with a firm called Landscapes of Place, and received an international award in 2011, an honor award from the American Society of Landscape Architects for landscape restoration design in Milwaukee's Menominee River Valley, if I'm not mistaken. And then Dan and Nancy are recipients of the 2014 Wisconsin Wetlands Association Wetlands Award. Congratulations. Pretty cool.
Well, thank you very much. It's quite an honor. We're thrilled to be here, and it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart.
Well, let's, you know, Katie, every single time you're here, I start the program by asking you how you define wetlands. And I, you know, there's always somebody new that hasn't listened before, or lots of people new that haven't listened before. So
one
let's
of these
start
days,
again.
Larry, I'm going to turn that question right on you and see if you've been listening all these years. But seriously, the three things that define wetlands, or that let you know if you have a wetland, are: is there water at or near the surface of your soil for all or part of the year? Are there water-loving plants nearby in the area? And is there the right kind of hydric soil or water soil in that area? So it's important to remember that it changes through time. Not all wetlands are wet all of the time. In fact, a bunch of really important wetlands are actually dry a lot of the year. But that doesn't make them not wetlands. They still are wetlands.
Why are they such an important ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And it's true that the services, the natural benefits that wetlands provide as compared to a prairie or a forest, all of which are important, but sort of ounce per ounce, wetlands provide the biggest bang for our buck in terms of providing clean water, storing floodwaters, providing wildlife habitat, cleaning water, and providing a infiltration into groundwater and other drinking sources. So super important ecosystems for our health, but also the health of all the critters and plants and animals we love.
And I know that our wetlands have changed a lot, and many disappeared over the years, too.
Yeah, Wisconsin's lost almost half of its original 10 million acres of wetlands, and the wetlands we have remaining on the landscape are degraded and sort of sick from many of the changes that we've made. We've changed the way water flows across the landscape. We've introduced invasive species that sometimes cause real problems for wetlands and reduce the amount of quality habitat available.
Yeah. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in, which I haven't done yet, so let me do that right now. Maybe you are aware of the wetlands in your area, or maybe you have some questions about them. Do you know how to protect wetlands? What's your favorite way to enjoy our wetlands here in Wisconsin? We've got so many wonderful wetlands and a lot of ways to enjoy them. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our program Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your wetland photos, questions, or comments right there. Dan, you're being honored for the work that you and Nancy do to protect wetlands, and the area that you love best is your 30-acre wetland complex in Door County, if I'm not mistaken. Describe that area for us.
That's correct, Larry. The wetland complex is part of a state natural area called the Bayshore Blufflands, which is below the Niagara Escarpment. If folks know what that is, it's really the limestone ridge that runs up Door County. And the consequence with the porous rock up there called karst is that the water percolates up and down, and the surface water and groundwater are highly connected. And it gives just a very vibrant wetland community an opportunity and a niche to develop and thrive. Mm. Our work there has been largely involved in removing many of the invasive species up there, and we've had quite good success. We're quite honored by the Wisconsin Wetlands Association recognition, And we're also pretty compelled just by spending a day out in the middle of the wetlands working and enjoying the habitat that's around us.
How did you first come to have that land or be associated with it?
It was a bit of a happenstance where we had been looking for a wetland project, and the Door County Land Trust responded to our call and invited us up to take a look around. We were introduced to the neighborhood, and that's a big part of any restoration project, is that having your neighbors be like-minded is tremendously helpful. When we think of wetlands, we have to remember how connected they all are. And to do work in isolation is a lonely job for wetlands. But if your neighbors have a sense of wetlands, it makes the lifting a lot lighter. So we were brought in by the Door County Land Trust and had an opportunity to stick our boots in the ground.
And you have any idea how many hours you've spent?
Yes, we do.
Speaking
actually.
Of boots in the ground.
It's funny you mention that. It's we started out by forecasting how many stems of reed canary grass might be on this property. We got out the spreadsheet and concluded that there are probably about 1 million stems of reed canary grass that needed to be removed. We've threw that spreadsheet away and then just started to work. And we've put in a few thousand hours, 2,000 plus hours so far of work on that.
And but the results?
The results are quite good. We think of ourselves not as eradicating these species, but more as the predator species for these invasives. And that recognizing that says you have to go back and consume every year if you're the predator species.
Well, Katie, you've got to be really pleased to have someone like Dan and someone like Nancy out there doing that kind of work.
They are such an inspiration to me personally and to our organization and to landowners all over the place for the amount of passion and dedication that they provide and the hope that they demonstrate for what's possible when you care and are dedicated and focused on what you want to do.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in with questions and comments. Again, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And by the way, a lot of the photos that are up there already from our herps, from our reptiles and amphibians, there's also some great wetland shots in there as well. So take a look at that when you're online. John in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I'm calling to remind folks that there's a problem with Lake Mendota. It's 5 feet higher than its natural level, which has created the loss of over 2 square miles of wetlands. And it, of course, threatens those frogs and turtles, too, because it's lowered so much in the winter relative to its summer height to allow for the lake to become a big floodwater retention basin in the spring. And I'm wondering where Wetlands Association stands on the proposal from regional environmentalists to gradually over a 30-year period lower the lake back to its natural level in 1 to 3 inch increments so we control invasives and so forth and get our big, white, brilliant sand beaches that used to be here before 1848 lake.
All right. Let's turn to Katie for that.
Yeah, interesting question, John. Actually, it's funny that this comes up because the Cherokee Marsh, I think the wetlands that he's referring to, the folks that are in charge of that project and trying to restore those wetlands were Wetlands Awards winners themselves, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Russ Hefty and the folks out there doing that good work. It's true that the lake levels are higher than they were historically and that has had a negative impact on the wetlands along the Yarra River, particularly in Cherokee Marsh and upwards, because literally chunks of the wetland would float away because they would get pushed up so high on this high water. So it is a big problem. It has resulted in some important damage to that area. Water level management on lakes is a very tricky issue because people feel very passionately about it. It works best to make decisions collectively so that you can get together, hear everybody's input about what their needs and challenges are, and help folks recognize that the choices that they might want for their own dock or their own waterfront property are having impacts that they may not be aware of. And through that kind of dialogue can really come to a conclusion where everybody decides there's a win-win that might be a compromise. It might not be the most perfect thing for everybody. But I'm not up to speed on the specifics of this particular change that he's that John mentioned. But in concept, we're very positive of a project that would try to bring those stakeholders together.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you have had a lot of experience in other places where lake levels were altered, and John, you probably worked on that as well.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, the altered landscapes can be quite challenging, and you really are best if you can pay attention to the historical perspective. John mentioned the 1840s reference point for this water, and I think it's sometimes very helpful to go back to those original landscape reference points we have and use those to at least tell us what worked at one point in time on this place in the ground.
And thanks again for calling, John. Maybe you could tell us a little more about your business and your organization.
Certainly. The business is Landscapes of Place. It was started by my wife and partner, Nancy Ayton, who made this a very effective second career. And I joined the firm about 3 years ago. We specialize in habitat restoration, mostly on the eastern part of Wisconsin, a little bit in the UP. We're a very small consulting firm, but require that we get boots on the ground to learn a landscape before we do any work, and to really be actively involved in putting our shovel and our boots in the ground so that you can learn. In the case of wetlands, there are different kinds of wetland soils. You need to pay attention to what the ground is telling you, what the various layers of plants are telling you, and so really connecting yourself with a client who has a long-term vision for a habitat restoration is our sweet spot.
Yeah, and I imagine you come into some of those conflicts that we were just, you know, sort of referencing earlier.
Yeah, indeed. Katie. I mean, we are in a shared landscape environment where, and it's especially sensitive with water because we, as they say, we all live downstream, which means we all live upstream, and so our behavior is very relevant to engage neighboring properties, neighboring owners, and remembering that 75% of all wetlands in Wisconsin are privately owned. So one of the things that I'd like to thank our listeners for is that many of you out there are owning wetlands, stewarding them, caring for them for the benefit of the state as a whole, and
yeah.
It's a tremendous
That's
service.
A great point.
And we'll talk some more, certainly, about wetlands with our two guests, Dan Collins and Katie Belfus. I'm Larry Mueller. We'll be discussing wetlands right up until 12:30. But first, let's take a look at the news. Our environment is so complex, and our wetlands are a crucial element. The challenge is how to enjoy and preserve them at the same time. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're lucky to have a great organization like the Wisconsin Wetlands Association working to educate you and me to give us the knowledge and the tools to protect and appreciate our wetlands. Katie Belfus, the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, has been with us many times, and it's always a pleasure. Katie, thanks for coming by.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you.
And we also have with us today Dan Collins. He works in ecological restoration, design, and planning, implementation, and management, along with his partner, Nancy Ayton, and their firm, Landscapes of Place, as the title of it, received an international award, 2011 Honor Award from the American Society of Landscape Architects for landscape restoration design in Milwaukee's Menominee River Valley. And Dan and Nancy are recipients of the 2014 Wisconsin Wetlands Association Wetlands Award. And Dan, thank you again for spending time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a great topic, and it's just a treat to be here.
Well, I'm so glad you could be here. And Katie, Dan and Nancy are recipients, but there are other recipients as well.
They are. We have a bunch of great award winners this year. This is an annual program for us, and it's so fun to see who percolates up through the nomination process. We learn about such great work being done around the state. So the other award winners this year are Bob Dubois, who's an aquatic ecologist with the DNR and works on dragonfly and damselfly conservation in the state. really done some really important work for documenting the status of those creatures and helping folks learn about them. Speaking of helping folks learn about them, another award winner is Carl Legler, who wrote Dragonflies of Wisconsin, which is the go-to field guide for folks who like dragonflies and damselflies. Yeah. So we're having a buzzful year in the dragonfly department here. And then the Wisconsin County Code Administrators, and some of your listeners might go, huh? What are code administrators? Who are they? What do they do? And why do they care about wetlands? And frankly, I would have said the same thing about 3 or 4 years ago before we started working with this organization. It's the statewide professional organization that provides continuing education and support to county zoning and land use ordinance, the staff who administer those things. So they have a lot of important responsibility for seeing how land is cared for within their area. And they've been wonderful partners reaching out to us and saying, we have wetlands in our communities. We want our people who we serve to know more about them and know how to better care for them and know how we can improve the work that we do to make sure that those wetlands stay on the landscape. So they've been tremendous partners of us and for the last several years and done just terrific work to reach out to this group of people.
I always enjoy these kinds of banquets. I've been master of ceremonies for a number of them. It's always so inspiring to hear what the folks have done.
It is. It's really wonderful. And it keeps us all motivated at the Wetlands Association. It's really fabulous stuff.
Dakota in Stevens Point has a question, and I bet it's for Dan. Hi, Dakota. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Just first of all, I'd like to thank both of you guys for all the work that you do. My question was, do you have any advice for how to manage invasive species, especially reed canary and wet prairie areas or ephemeral wetlands, drier wetlands?
Yeah, that is probably, some people call it the queen mother of invasive species on wetlands. It's certainly difficult. But I guess in general, there's a couple of guidelines that I offer folks. One of them is if, I don't know how many acres you're looking at, but if you can allocate 10 hours per acre, you can take a severely impacted reed canary wetland and get that started on a trajectory toward ecological health. From that point forward, you need to be prepared to invest about 2 hours per acre per year to sustain it. And the techniques that you'll need to use are, we call it sort of chasing the life cycle of that plant. You have to, in certain times of the year, you're maybe looking at uprooting them. At certain times of the year, you're maybe looking at herbicide, especially if it's a dry cycling wetland and you can carefully apply it. At certain times of the year, we actually seed top, which we find to be extremely important in ephemeral wetlands because those seeds fall to the bottom and one seed head can have hundreds of small plants sprouting. So there's a number of techniques you can use, but tenacity is sort of the ultimate weapon against them. If you can sustain an ongoing effort in a particular footprint, you can achieve some really good success.
Dan and Nancy have some amazing before and after pictures of their property in Door County, and it is amazing what they've done. The other thing that I would say, Dakota, is to pay attention and learn about how water enters your land and what's upstream. And sometimes we see reed canary grass come in. It's sort of like a scab on an injury, where the reed canary grass itself might not be, it's the sign of a different problem. Where there might be some problem with sediment coming in or increased nutrients that might not have been there historically. So it's sort of, I totally agree with what Dan said, and it's sort of a 1-2. You have to make sure you understand why the scab's there to begin with. You can't just go pick off the scab. You want to make the system heal.
You know, and thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And I was thinking about this. A friend, Phil Beeble, has a property on Lake Michigan, and their family decided a long time ago they were not going to allow invasive plants on their. They were going to take care of their piece, and a little more besides. But it's amazing to walk. I mean, it's like the difference is night and day from their property to the next property, and you think, oh gosh, if everybody would just have done what that family
That's
did.
That's right, and it's so much easier to control invasive plants or anything invasive when it's early. when there's not that much. And so getting to know the wetland invaders or any invader in your neighborhood, the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin has great resources to help you learn how to recognize those plants in the field. And, you know, keeping an eye out is the most important first step so that you know what you have.
Yeah, absolutely. We have, and he says that, you know, once the initial, the hard work, as you were talking about earlier, Dan, you know, 10 hours per acre, you know, once that initial, then it's not as bad. I mean, then you're a couple hours.
Yeah, it's I think of it, instead of cutting the lawn, I'm working the wetlands.
So. Yeah. There you go. I need a lot more fun, as a matter of fact. Ann in Random Lake, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Hi. My question is about creating wetlands, if it's possible. We're in extreme southeastern Wisconsin. We have about 17 acres. Some of it is relatively low. So that's my question, if it's possible to scrape the land or something and sort of create a wetlands area, or mm-hmm. if it's naturally occurring or nothing. And I'll listen off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, that's a great question, Ann. And I think Dan and I would agree that the first thing we would suggest that you do is find out what was on that property historically. You can find aerial photos, historic aerial photos. A lot of them are available online or through your local county or your NRCS office. Find out what was there before. Get to know your soils. You can go dig a little hole in the area where you think is low and look at the soils and get a sense of whether they're wetland-supporting soils. If there was a wetland there historically, or if you've got the right components, then it is a really great opportunity to put wetlands back on the landscape, and there's a lot of resources available, like funding and technical support, to help you be able to do that. If it's not a place where wetlands were historically, then it probably isn't going to be very easy to put a wetland back there because it doesn't have the sort of underpinnings for what it needs. So you might look at a different option in there. Anything else you want to add to that, Dan?
I would just like to underline what you said about going back to the historical perspective. There's some wonderful resources online available for everybody. The 1938 aerials that were done largely for agriculture purposes are available for every square foot of Wisconsin. It's at the state cartographer's office if you look that up online, and you can find highly detailed photos from 1938 of your exact footprint, and it will tell you if you or your neighbors might have had wetlands at that mm-hmm. time.
Wow.
And we have another resource that you might be interested in, which is our recently published My Healthy Wetlands Handbook for wetland owners.
I have a copy right in front of me,
That's
as a matter
so
of fact.
That's so great. Those are available through our office, and we'll make sure that that link is on the Facebook page. Our phone number, if I can say that, Larry, is 608-250-9971. So it's a publication that sort of walks through what wetlands are, why they matter, how you can get to know yours better, and offers some information about stewarding your land, doing management and care for your property. There is a chapter on bringing back former wetlands, and there's links to information about other resources that are available to you. So we'd be happy to get you a copy of that, Anne, if you can give us a call, or anybody else who's listening.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, and there's some wonderful photography, color photography.
Blessed.
There's a lot of it, mm-hmm. and it's... That really, I think, adds so much to the publication.
So grateful to all the photographers that contributed those pictures for our use.
Yeah. You know, talking about building wetlands, Carol in the town of Barnes, I have some property with some friends in the town of Barnes, would like to know how to go about purchasing land that could be converted into wetlands and protected. Looking to protect lands.
Well, that is a great segue from the last caller. And if you're looking to buy a property with wetlands on it, again, you know, you probably have a part of the state that you're interested in. You can look. One resource, actually, that I would really encourage Carol to contact is her local land trust. If you don't know who that is, you can visit gatheringwaters.org. Gathering Waters is the statewide group that supports and promotes land trusts in the state, and they have a really great system for letting you know exactly who the land trusts are that are operating in your community. The reason I suggest land trusts is that those guys have done a lot of planning. They can purchase some land. They can purchase easements for other land, but they can't protect all of the property that's important. But they very likely have identified areas in the community where protecting wetlands would be really terrific,
yeah.
and so they might have be able to steer you in a good direction, Carol.
And Bill had a comment as a statewide population, we seem not to appreciate the value of water cleansed by wetland filtering, and you did mention a little bit about that earlier, Katie. This process is fantastic. How much of the water that Wisconsinites actually drink, his question is, has been processed by wetlands or other natural formations in the state? Is there any way at all to get to know that?
If I had to guess, I would say 100%, Larry. Because I think at some point, you know, water is a cycle, right? It comes and it goes through the cycle. And at some point in its life, it's gone through a wetland. That's totally out of the air that I'm guessing that. But my knowledge of ecology is that there's probably a wetland in every drinking water somewhere.
That sounds like a good answer to me.
That sounds like a great answer to me. And that was a good question, too. Thank you. Mary in Eau Claire, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about how to manage impacts on wetlands and decision-making process, because there's a big industrial operation about 10 miles from me, and they want to do a whole lot of dredging, and of course there's going to be a whole lot of extra water. Now, their plan A had been to dump it in the nearest wetland, and the county vetoed that. So plan B is to put open infiltration ponds next to the wetlands. And I'm just wondering, what sort of impact would that have on the wetlands?
Wow. The fact that they were going to just dump it in a wetland might indicate that they lack knowledge.
I say the knowledge is quite accessible, but they have blinkers.
Yeah, okay.
Interesting point.
All right. Well, I probably Katie and Dan may have comments on that.
Yeah, first, I just want to thank Mary for being aware, because that's the most important thing for all of us as citizens, to pay attention to what's going on in our communities and make sure that other people are paying attention so that people can be engaged in that decision-making process. So way to go. Where and when and how to be effective advocates on behalf of your community's natural resources is a really important question and varies from case to case. So I don't want to give too much, it's like the guy who says I'm not allowed to give medical advice. I'm not a real doctor, but I don't want to comment specifically on your situation because it's so situation dependent. But there are rules that govern certainly dumping into wetlands of material. Sometimes there is a case for putting some kind of infiltration wetland or basin above a wetland. Sometimes that can be effective in at least minimizing some of the problems. It's one solution. It's not necessarily the best one. Dan, do you want to weigh in?
I'm sort of, as a boots on the ground person, a little bit skeptical of engineered solutions, and this is sounding like an engineered solution. So it really means we have to be extremely cautious about what's actually going on, and we need to seek what public information we can find about the plans and really involve ourselves in the planning process. And it often is done well when it's in conjunction with neighbors, getting together with people who are like-minded, who might live in proximity, works much better. And to the extent we can get our voices heard, then our outcomes are better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you need specific information on how to engage yourself in the process of, with the decision-making process in your community, I'd invite you to call our office. We have a person on staff who can help direct you, at least give you some advice about the best times to get involved in the process.
And your phone number again is?
608-250-9971. And our website is wisconsinwetlands.org.
608-250-9971, was it?
That's exactly right.
9971. I think we have it posted up on my Facebook page, on our Facebook page as well. So, and also a link to your site, too.
Great.
So if people are wondering, they can go there and for help, too. Mary, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it very much. We have Judy in La Crescent, Minnesota, up next. Judy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you so very much.
My question is, I live right on the Mississippi across the river from La Crosse, but there's always a lot of arguing about putting a road through the wetlands in La Crosse. I also know that there are some wonderful wetlands around Brownsville, Wisconsin, and I wonder if you could address some of the reasons for maintaining those and any facts that you know with regards to the La Crosse area wetlands.
Great question. We actually, one of our programs of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association is an annual wetland science conference, and last year we had our conference in La Crosse, and as part of the conference we held a field trip to those very La Crosse River wetlands, and we've been sort of engaged with the folks that are doing great work to keep an eye out for those and try to minimize impacts. Whenever you have urban wetlands, in particular, you have this interface between development pressures and protecting nature, and it's always tricky. And the of course, in the best world, you'd protect nature and figure out a different place to put your development, but that doesn't always work. And so I think making sure that you're paying attention to keeping the natural resources that you have as good as you can, and when you have to have losses or impacts, figuring out the best way to minimize those and to improve mitigation is sometimes a word that people use, but to improve the system as a whole by protecting land upstream or waters upstream. So I don't know the specifics about that case. I do know that it is an ongoing issue and that there's a lot of people paying good attention and making very good suggestions about how to manage those impacts. Now, the wetlands along the Upper Mississippi River are internationally recognized wetlands of international importance. They were designated in 2010, I believe, by the International Ramsar Convention on Wetlands. So those are, people all around the world know that those wetlands are important.
Thanks, Judy, again for calling. Stephanie in West Bend, Wisconsin. Hi, thank you for calling.
It's Bethany with a B.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Hi, thank you. I have a quick question. We have a lake property in northern Wisconsin in Woodboro Township, and our property is right on the lake. It's about a 350-acre lake, Manson Lake, off of Highway 8. A road goes by the front of our property, and on either side there is a substantial wetland area. And some people, I think, would like to potentially purchase that and fill it in. And I'm wondering what, if any, are the laws.
What you can do about it, yeah.
Well, we are fortunate that wetland fill is generally not allowed. It's certainly something that has to be permitted, certainly by the state, and in some cases also by the federal government, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. They have to make sure they understand the water quality impacts if there were to be wetland fill, and there's an avoid, minimize, and mitigate standard that they apply. Generally speaking, it's pretty hard to get a permit to just fill a wetland unless there's a big, substantial case for why it needs to be so. Unfortunately, we built a lot of our roads through wetlands because one of the sad stories of wetlands is that they've been sort of disregarded as the unwanted landscape. They're just messes. They're just swamps, and all the mosquitoes and the swamp thing comes from there. And generally speaking, the public understanding or impression of wetlands historically has been very negative. And so a lot of our work has been trying to counteract that. And I think our community in general is growing to a better appreciation for the importance of wetlands on the landscape.
We have so many other questions. I know someone was wondering if reed canary grass is the same thing as Phragmites, and that's not the case for sure. And a person could go online and find some more about both those.
Yeah, the IPAW site, the
Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, has a great bit, and we actually talk about those two species in our wetland handbook, the My Healthy Wetland Handbook, as well.
Yeah, and buckthorn also comes up in a few questions, and how to destroy it in a non-chemical way. And again, that's pretty tough sledding, too.
There are techniques you can use, but it is tough sledding. I mean, if there are bigger ones, you can girdle them and at least get the seed production to stop. And if there are smaller ones, you can weed wrench them. There are different sizes of devices called weed wrenches you can use for non-chemical. But chemical application right at the cut site seems to be pretty effective. And when done carefully, can be done fairly benignly. Nothing's entirely benign.
No, nothing is. And I want to just mention again to your booklet, My Healthy Wetland, a handbook for wetland owners and people can get that by going to your website or giving you a call.
Yep, people can go to our website. We actually have a little online order form for that. It's free to landowners along Lake Michigan and a small charge for landowners in other parts of the state. Its focus is on eastern Wisconsin. So, we'd be happy to get that to you. And if you'd rather call, that's fine too. And 608-250-9971.
Katie, Dan, congratulations again.
Well, thank you so much.
And Katie, thank you so much as well.
It's always a pleasure.
Always great to have you with us. And we'll definitely be talking more about our Wisconsin wetlands, probably with these two guests. I wouldn't doubt it a bit. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow we're going to take a look at seasonal affective disorder, for one thing, and then healthy and satisfying snacks as well. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.